It was up, it was down, it was back up again, it was down again. But in the end, we got to where we needed to go. No, I'm not just talking about Valentine's Day up and down the country. I am talking about events at the Bodeski Stadium on Tuesday as Reading pulled one out to grab a 3-2 win over Brentford. My co-host is already corpsing on the mic opposite me, so I'll leave that introduction there. We've got lots to talk about this week. 4 points for Reading. We're slowly moving towards that playoff promised land. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetileSN.com. Welcome to the Tile SN podcast, episode number 118. Thank you very much once again for hitting that download button and listening to the show. Hope you've all had a great week. Before I go any further, I've got to get that plug in for the Patreon campaign, and a big thanks to those of you who have stepped up this week, including John Jackson, who's put his money where his mouth is and helped support the show by making a donation over there. So if you fancy doing the same, joining that elite circle, that VIP bit, you can head over to patreon.com/thetilesend. That's patreon.com/thetilesend to find out more. Right, I've already hinted at his presence. I am joined this week by assistant editor Mark Mayo. Mark, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks. It was good then that quite often after the show we discuss about the little snippet we're going to have right at the start, but I think we can kind of have the intro as the little snippet joke bit right at the start, can't we?
What do you mean joke bit?
That'd be a nice little...
Played that perfectly fine. Did you have a good week?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I missed the Barnsley game and went to the Brentford game, so I played it absolutely perfectly.
You have. You didn't miss much against Barnsley on Saturday, I've got to say that, but Tuesday was well worth the entrance fee, so for those who did either bring their partner along or unfortunately don't have a partner, be it through choice or whatnot, or if you just said, sod it, I'm going to the match, you were very much entertained, and we will get into that right now. Let's head in to the recap.
View from the Tarlhurst end.
Recapping this week's Championship action.
So, Mark, two games this week. As mentioned, the 0-0 draw with Barnsley on Saturday, followed up by that 3-2 win over Brentford on Tuesday night. Would you have taken 4 points if that was offered to you at the start of the week?
Yeah, I think so. We had the same discussion going into the Cardiff and who else were we playing the week before?
Oh, Fulham. Fulham, yes.
Yeah, we had that discussion and we kind of said 4 points would do, and we got six out of that. So four out of the next two home games, that's three wins out of four and one draw. That's not too bad, is it?
Yeah, 2 points per game will certainly get you in the playoffs and probably actually gets you promoted automatically because it's 92, my basic maths skills, if they hold up anyway. So getting those 4 points, good. Didn't necessarily have such a positive feeling walking out of the Bodeski on Saturday, though. You got that feeling it was a game that was really there to be won. Barnsley, very organised, very hard-working side. They had lost three key players over the transfer window, but you could see exactly why they've managed to hang around the top 10 despite all those setbacks. They really pushed Reading hard, but the game was there to be won. I know you weren't at the ground, Mark, but when you saw that lineup from Yap, and you looked at the personnel, you had the likes of Roy Bearens back in the team and George Evans in the midfield as well. Did you think maybe he should have been a little bit more attacking?
Yeah, I think so. The problem is we're coming up against a team like Barnsley is they're so sort of consistent in their ways. They're not a team that go on like 5-match winning streaks or 5-match losing streaks. So you can't guarantee in any win. And he often says after the games, there's no easy games to play. And I think he approached it just as much as I thought he was going to approach it because he doesn't throw out these attacking lineups very often, does he? And ultimately, the fact that we got a clean sheet is probably the positive you would take from it.
Yeah, there weren't a massive amount of saves for either keeper to make. Stam, as I said, picking that side. So now, on the halfway mark, though, takes off Liam Kelly, brings on Lewis Graben, and at this point you think, great! We're going to go for this. We're going to put another man up front. We might go 4-4-2 or give Kermit some real support. But no, Lewis Graben's deployed in a very deep role. I want to say it was kind of a free role, but he did at times literally just seem to be playing as a midfielder. Could you sort of see the rationale behind it?
It's curious. I'm not sure I can see. Even having watched him play up front on Tuesday night, I think that his game is getting in behind the defence, isn't it? And he can pick up the ball and have a little bit of a dribble, but so can Danny Williams. And Danny Williams is off at right back, so that kind of shows us to the unorthodox mentality that Stam's happy to embrace. And I'm not sure that I would be picking him there again.
No, I suppose the logic for me watching the game was that perhaps he thought Graben would be making those runs from deep really sort of surging into the box and being that late presence while you have got wingers like Behrens on the pitch. But it just didn't quite work out. I thought Behrens had a stinker. Sort of summed up for me the worst of his game. Yeah, there were those couple of classy moments, but I thought his work rate was lacklustre. Second half in particular, really didn't get involved. But he stayed on for 90 minutes. He was only replaced in the dying seconds by the birthday boy, Yaku Meite. You've had three quarters of a season nearly now to look at Stam and the way he makes his substitutions. This will play, obviously, a bigger part when we talk about the Brentford game, but are you genuinely happy with how he uses his bench?
I think if you compare him to the old managers that we've had in the past, we're kind of used to a lot of managers in the Premier League, and certainly the Koppel-McDermott breed were 60 minutes in, changed the game. I remember one time we were under Koppel away at Ipswich, and he took long off after 50 minutes. And 5 minutes into the second half, that really is a sign that, right, I'm not happy with you, I'm slinging you and taking you out. But Stam, apart from that half-time sub he talks about, I don't think I remember any sort of situation where he's taken someone off early in a game or in a half.
Yeah, Liam Kelly at Rotherham, I suppose, when he was in the defence, got that first half hooking was about
and Kelly against Barnsley as well.
Kelly seems to be the full guy here. If I need to make an early sub, Liam, you're coming off. But if there was a real positive take from that Barnsley game, I said not an awful lot to digest from this one. Although I do very much encourage you to go check out Will's further reading column because he picks up three very good topics that we'll come into in the mailbag. But the one real positive for me, Mark, was Tyler Blackett, who's come in for a lot of stick from fans this season, not generally been impressed. I can't say I've been overwhelmed. I don't think he's done badly to this point, especially when he's been a defence. At left back, I think he's poor. But in the defence, he's always been okay. Saturday, I thought he really, not came of age, but certainly in a Reading shirt, really showed what he can do and why he was a Manchester United player. I thought he was excellent. Interceptions, he was in the right place at the right time, making some great tackles. His passing was crisp. Real sort of driving performance. Where has this Tyler Blackett been?
Well, it takes time to get to that sort of stage, isn't it? Because I think what he's lacked was that sort of mental sure-footedness, because he's got the physicality and he's got the technique. I've no doubt about that. But that ability just to say, I belong here, in a sense. And it feels like all his career he's been sort of fighting that. Obviously at Man United, at Celtic as well, trying to prove himself. And hopefully the fact that he's played, was in that 20, 25 games for us, should mean that he's, you know, I'm ready to be here and I'm good enough to be in this team. And that should show in his performances. And I thought he was good again on Tuesday against Brentford.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I know Wasti, who did player ratings, which you can go read on thetalesden.com, I know he gave him a 5, which by our rating scale was a little bit below par. I thought that was a little bit harsh. He sort of thought he was a bit shaky and the most uncertain of that sort of back five unit. I disagree a little bit. I thought he was still good. I still thought he was showing positive signs, albeit the entire defence was getting overrun in a 40-minute period. But, I mean, let's move on to that Brentford game. If I thought the lineup against Barnsley was conservative, you couldn't say that against Brentford. Three changes made. Swift, Graben and Much all coming into the side. No Kermigan, no Evans. This was a game that Stan was clearly going for it. And for 25 minutes, Mark, I sat there and I thought, Reading are going to give this team a hiding. They were all over them.
Yeah, we haven't had any sort of 5-6-0 wins. And after you go 1-0 up after 25 minutes and you think we've got Much, Kelly and Swift all along the midfield three. McCleary was having a good game. Graben was obviously getting in amongst, and it did genuinely look like for 25 minutes. It reminded me of those Adkins performances in the Championship a few years ago where we'd absolutely storm teams for 25 minutes. We go a goal ahead and then go, oh, what now? What's next? And the team very much had that sense of just going, okay, well, we're 1-0 up now. What do we do?
But you see, that's been quite uncharacteristic from Stam teams so far, because the stats were, when Reading took the lead, they were generally holding them. They seemed to just be able to close games down. What happened after that 25-minute point? Because I was sat there watching it, and I couldn't really tell too much of what was going on. Okay, the composure maybe dropped a little bit. The tempo wasn't as high.
I think sort of putting the shoe on the other foot, as it were, looking at Brentford, I think they pushed a little bit higher. They upped their urgency and their tempo a little bit, which kind of caught us off guard in a sense, because the players who took their foot off the gas were in the midfield, Much, Swift and Kelly, I would say, were the three that kind of dropped off the most. And as soon as Brentford were able to bypass the midfield, then they got at the back line. And we know that this back line is a little bit shaky. And from that, they then They then created a lot of chances in the first half alone.
Well, it's still patchwork, isn't it? I mean, when you've got Danny Williams, who went back to right back for the Brentford game, certainly to start with, and you put Gunter into that central three, it's not ideal. And as good as I've just praised Blackett and said he's been great, he's still not at that top level. And Liam Moore has had an up and down start to the year. So not ideal, but yeah, I mean, those first 25 minutes, Grabban and McLeary, I thought, were showing some real understanding. Reading were being a lot more direct in those first 25 minutes. They were getting balls over the top. They were getting balls down the flank. And I think Dean Smith was maybe caught a little bit off guard. I don't think he expected Reading to have such mobility and pace in that forward line. And when you have those two players, they're such a threat. And you can sort of see what we've been missing maybe over the last couple of years.
We do play well on the counter. For all our little passing around, we do kind of, you know, a lot of our goals this season have been on the counter. I'd be willing to say more on the counter than more through passing out the back. And Brentford didn't expect that. You're absolutely right. They kind of had a high line, which meant the first goal, McLeary fed in down the right, and obviously the second as well. I get the sense with Brentford, they're kind of like us and they're kind of like Fulham. I get the sense as well that they come into these games thinking they can put their own sort of mark on it and they can dictate the play. But Brentford, they just seemed a little bit out of form. They didn't quite have the players that were able to do that.
Yeah, and credit to Brentford for coming back in this game, because they've had a miserable away record on the road. I think it was something like 9 defeats from 15 coming into this one. Yeah, they'd, you know, well beaten us at Griffin Park 4-1 earlier in the season, but this isn't a team high on confidence, they're low in the league. And they just ground themselves out and got back into this game. And they should have been level before half-time. I thought Reading got themselves out of jail. I mean, we met up at half-time, we were saying the same. It was a case of Reading were very much hanging on. Stan made that change against Barnsley at half-time. I was sat there thinking, he needs to make a change now. Because the tide of the game, it wasn't just a sort of five-minute period of pressure from Brentford. This was 20 sustained minutes of real intense pressure. Were you calling out for that sub at the break? Or do you think Stan was right, sort of stand pat and give those players another chance?
I do think the break would have been a little bit premature, because you kind of expect a reaction anyway for going into the second half. And especially with the midfield, as I said, it was kind of dropping off. You just expect him to say, pick up your work rate, put a foot on the ball, kill the game a little bit, because they're going to come out high after that first half, which they did quite well to end with Brentford. But it got to about 65 minutes in, and by then they were still creating a few chances. We certainly hadn't improved at all. And by then, I definitely thought that, given how well Evans did when he did come on, you'd have thought that performance would have been absolutely perfect at 1-0.
Yeah, and if there was a substitute that changed the game, but it's from the Brentford side of things, I thought Joseph Soon, if I can't even pronounce his name, my legendary pronunciation skills, should I say, continue, can't even pronounce the sentence anymore. he came on in 61 minutes, and he was really going at Reading down our right-hand side. Yeah. Danny Williams was just absolutely at sea. And sure enough, within minutes of him coming on, Brentford had bagged two goals. Two goals in 4 minutes from Jota and Vibe. And the game momentum was completely swung. I was just sat there stunned. I was really frustrated at Stam for not having been more proactive. Again, am I being a little bit harsh on him?
I think the story of the game will suggest that we were, or because I agree with you, I think he was completely complicit in what Brentford did to the game. He completely let us then push forward and let us drop back, and the midfield weren't capable of dealing with it, and the three changes he did make came two goals too late, frankly. You could have made all those changes. I thought Danny Williams was much better in central midfield than he was at right back. And that is not a surprise in any kind of way, because he is a central midfielder.
Yeah.
And Gunter was perfectly capable at right back, even if he did get caught out by Josephine at 3-2, which he almost scored, to immediately level the scores. And the way they played after those subs sort of vindicates the fact that he should have made them earlier.
Yeah, well, credit to him, because he did make those subs. Okay, you can say he had nothing left to lose at that point, but he makes the triple sub and Reading respond. Danny Williams gets the equaliser, pretty much quite a carbon copy of the first goal, really. Good run down the right from McLeary, cross across the box, and Williams in the right place at the right time. Good finish from him. But the third goal, I use the word zany on Twitter to describe it, because I couldn't think of anything else. It's a humped long ball from inside, deep inside the Reading half. It's got some real distance on it. Sort of bouncing awkwardly towards the edge of the Brentford area, their keeper, Bentley, steams out to clear the ball. At least I think he's trying to clear the ball. He sort of hits the outside of his boot.
It's almost like he's not expecting the ball to be there, isn't it? Even though he's watched it for a good 5 seconds.
I watched the replay and I think he might have been trying to make a little pass. I think he might have got a moment of indecision. Yeah, and tried to make a little pass instead. But whatever the case, he doesn't kick it into touch like he should do. Pats it down with his boot just into the path of Kermigan. And you've got that strange situation of Kermigan's got an open goal from 35 yards out, hits it towards goal, and I'm sat in Y25 with that no mentality, because you can just see it trickling wide. But then
it's like the end of the movie, isn't it? It's like, are we going to get it, or is this going to be the closing credits?
Yeah, the train is steaming towards the damsel in distress who's tied to the train tracks, and our hero is Roy Behrens, who swoops in to rescue her, and in this case, rescue the ball and nudge it into the back of the net. Mazdad goes crazy. Fantastic win. As you mentioned, there were some hairy moments towards the end, but this team, every time you think that, is this the moment the bubble bursts? Is this the moment we get found out? They find a way to win.
It is like a Valentine's Day rom-com, isn't it? You sort of think, oh, well, he's screwed it up. He's messed it up with her. Oh, no, he's gone to the airport and he's caught her and she's in love with him. And that's it. And it's, you kind of feel like every time we're making these dastardly last minute sort of pleas for the game to stay with us, and we managed to pull it off somehow, and you're sitting there thinking, no, why is the points going home with him? That's not making sense at all.
I like it. I see where you're trying to go. But that goal was even more crucial in the context of results elsewhere in the championship last night, because basically all of the main championship rivals won or got a decent result. There was a win for Fulham, a win for Sheffield Wednesday, Leeds won, Huddersfield won.
Last minute as well, when they?
Yeah.
92nd minute win.
Norwich, who were the main team in seventh, they drew, but they were playing Newcastle. And Brighton also drew as well. So Reading actually ended up making up ground on that top two. They're now 5 points behind Brighton, 6 behind Newcastle. Both those two teams have a game in hand on us. The other main concern is looking down to that team in seventh. That is Norwich. They have played the same number of games as they are 9 points back. Although if Fulham do win their game in hand, they will leapfrog Norwich. And so that gap will be 8 points. So we're looking at least an 8 point gap back to the playoffs, with a maximum of 14 games to go. Well, 14 games for this chasing pack. Are we there? Can we start putting those playoff dates in our diary? Or is there still a chance it can all go wrong?
I think this next sort of 5-6 week period will be the time that we find that out. But the intrepidation I have with it sort of bases around the fact that all season I've thought this is a pretty poor championship in terms of quality. And the reason that I think that's coming home now is that you can't rely on Birmingham, Preston, Rotherham, Wigan, Wolves, Nottingham Forest. You can't rely on them to pick up points against the teams around us. Leeds beat Bristol City pretty comfortably. Brighton failed at Ipswich, but otherwise they've been very comfortable, especially at home.
Neil Warnock, we've got, I can't believe I'm saying this, we've got to send a thank you note to Neil Warnock. He's knocked off 2 good wins this week. They've won at Leeds and they've won at Derby.
And that shows to me, if he's doing well, then the quality of the rest of the rest of the sides really is quite low. And that's, I think that once we've played these teams, we'll get a much better sense, because we're capable of doing anything against the Huddersfield and Brighton.
Where does the line stop for you in terms of who's actually a realistic contender? I mentioned Fulham at the moment, they are 11 points back from us with a game in hand. Then you've got Norwich, I said 9 points, they played the same amount of games as us. Barnsley a bit further back, 11 points with the same games as well. Preston, a point further back, so 12 points. Are Preston still in with a chance of catching us at 12 points back?
Well, we thought Derby were our big competitors, and they're behind Preston now as well, aren't they?
So, yeah, if they win their game in hand, they will be 10 points behind us.
I mean, I would think Fulham and Barnsley are dangerous in a slight sense. I definitely would say Norwich are by far and above in terms of form and quality and just sheer history of a club that's able to get promotion there. That's the one that I would look out for. There's no guarantee that if Norwich get in that we won't be the team that drops out, because as I say, the others are doing well.
I have to say, I'm looking at this and I do think it's 4 from 5 at this point. I think Huddersfield have got such momentum behind them. I mean, they win their game and hand, they're 4 points ahead of us, and they're really challenging Brighton.
Yeah.
Leeds, obviously sticking around the mix. Sheffield Wednesday have got real firepower now. They've got Winland Rhodes, and then Norwich, as you mentioned, have got the pedigree, they've got the history, and they've got the squad behind them. One of those teams is going to have to miss out. And I think a lot of people are sat there looking. I talk to people at work, and a lot of people are saying, well, it's Reading. Reading are going to be that team to drop out. With taking yourself out of taking the heart out of the equation, do you think Reading are the most vulnerable of those teams to miss out? Or do you think there's a team where you go, actually, not them?
Well, the thing, if I was to be like a betting connoisseur or something, and if I knew something about every single team, what I'd know about Reading is the fact that when they play the teams around them, they don't tend to do so well. So we've lost to Newcastle, we've gone to Leeds and lost, we've drawn with Brighton, and we
beat Huddersfield
and Sheffield Wednesday at home, yep. But we've got to go away to those two teams.
Yeah.
Away
to Norwich as well.
So that would probably be a good thing to think, well, they're not going to do well. But as I say, we're capable of getting points there, but time will tell.
The way I look at it is you do look at Reading's fixtures and think there are some really tricky games, as we mentioned, away to Norwich, away to Sheffield Wednesday, away to Brighton, home to Newcastle, away to Huddersfield. But we're on 60 points at the moment. Generally, 75 is going to get you in the playoffs, say 78 to be sure. So Reading need to win 6 of their 14 games remaining. Based on the entire record, effort, there is no reason they're not going to get those 6 wins. They have got some fairly easier fixtures coming up. They've got to play the likes of Rotherham at home. They've got to play Burton away.
Wigan have got to come home. Haven't
Wigan they? Have got to come to the Millennium. There you go. Just in those 3 games, take that as 9 points. You can't take anything for granted. But that's 69 points. So then you're only looking at a couple of wins from those remaining games. As difficult as their run-in is, and even if they lose all those games, Reading should still, unless they completely implode, should still be in that top 6.
Yeah, and if it will be a complete implosion to take us out of it. And to be honest, I don't see any reason why we would be the team, as opposed to Leeds, as opposed to Norwich, who have already imploded this season. I don't see why we would be the one team that would implode. It's just the sheer weight of fixtures that might take its toll.
Yeah, it's going to be a big week. I mean, if you do lose those games at Huddersfield and Brighton, you do worry about a momentum shift, but let's talk about the positive.
If you win those games. If you win those games, that's incredible momentum the other way.
Absolutely. Well, we'll end the recap with Yapstam commenting on the Brentford game. He said, "I once lost the Champions League final with 3 goals in 6 minutes. It can happen. Why does it happen? Sometimes it happens because there's disappointment when the opposition scores. So the organisation is not there and players may still be thinking about that first goal. So they're not as sharp as they need to be in certain situations. If the opposition does well, they can take advantage of that. That's what they did and probably we did as well." So the best thing I can say about this Yapstam side is that they do seem to be able, especially at home, to stop momentum and change momentum around and grab things and nick points and nick wins. And they did that on Tuesday. I don't think they were the better side. They were outshot 23-12, which is just, you know, and in fact, in these 2 games combined, they've conceded 39 shots on goal and have only given away 2 goals from it. So credit to Ali Ohabsi, who's had another couple of good games, and the defence for making sure they're not key. But every metric, every stat you look at, says that Reading shouldn't be in this position. But once you go for so long defying that logic, you've got to say that it's just working.
Yeah, it's almost like the stats themselves are just noise in the background at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Well, as mentioned, 4 points, Reading still 4th in the table. Just quickly, and a very last point before we move on, Mark, we talked about the playoff race, but Brighton 5 points ahead of us, Newcastle 6 points ahead of us, both with the game in hand. Are you still looking up?
We have to beat both of those teams to have any kind of chance, I think. We're playing both of them, aren't we? I think we'll have to take 6 points or at least 4, and you have to have one of those teams have a real downturn that they haven't shown any signs of happening so far.
Yeah, and as well, Huddersfield on that march as well.
Exactly. It's not even necessarily us. We've finished 4th in a 3-horse race before. We can finish 6th in a 4-horse race this time.
Absolutely. Well, we'll run down the runners and riders again on Monday in Promotion Watch, which you can check out on thetalesn.com. Go check out last week's article for all the latest promotionals and whatnot. But in the meantime, we've got news to get to. Let's dig in to News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Keeping it family friendly, Mark, if I mention the name Chris Samuelson, what's the first word that pops into your head?
Well, luckily I can portray my full emotions by the fact that this is a podcast.
Yes.
And with actions, with my hands,
okay,
into various motions, I can portray what I really think about the band.
Okay, and if you were doing a gesture right now?
It would be side to side in a motion.
Okay, I see. Okay, okay. Good job we're a podcast, not a vodka. I get the feeling. Yes, Chris Samuelson was spotted in the director's box against Barnsley. Now, he didn't seem to be there on Tuesday night. You may remember him. If you don't remember him, well done for forgetting him. He was heavily involved in the Anton Zingarevich era at Reading, part of TSI and that whole group that unfortunately left the club in rather a precarious state. Now, exactly what Samuelson did, didn't do, invested, didn't invest, told Anton, didn't tell us, whatever. I don't know. I'm not in the boardroom. I can't say. But the very fact that he was associated with such a tainted era has always left a bit of a sour taste in the mouth. And some of the stories that were coming out around the sale of the club following that and what Samuelson wanted and what he was prepared to take, what he wasn't prepared to take for the club. Put it this way, he's not portrayed in a positive light. Again, I've never spoke to the guy, never met him, so I'm not going to pass too many personal judgments. I'll leave that out to all of you. The bottom line is he was seen in the director's box on Tuesday, talking to the club's chief exec, Nigel Howe. What he was doing there is the million-dollar question. Now, we know since leaving Reading, he's been involved in helping set up several other takeovers and also a few failed bids as well. He was involved in a bid to buy Bristol Rovers that didn't come through, but he was also heavily involved in the takeover at Aston Villa with Dr. Tony Jha and the Chinese involvement there. That's possibly where you would say the link to Reading comes from, Mark, with this ongoing Chinese takeover. Do you think it's possible he's linked to that group?
It's, as you say, it's impossible to know, and that's kind of what I don't like about it, is if I knew that he was linked with a person explicably, then I could go and check it out and have my own opinion on it. But because I just know that he is this kind of deal maker, in a sense, and from what I get, I don't believe that he's in with the ties, and he wasn't part of that deal to have the ties take over Reading. So I just get the sense that his presence around just means that there's other people having words in the ear for potential takeovers and things that are going to kind of knock us off the track, as it were, are more likely to happen when he's around.
Well, it's impossible to, you know, to ignore the fact now that we are midway through February and still no word on this Chinese takeover, and considering that they were hoping to get this done before Christmas. Mm. Two months later, and it still seems to be in limbo, very little coming out in terms of an update on the deal. You know, Brian Tevreden's been interviewed by Get Reading and the Reading Chronicle. He said he's got no updates on it. So there is obviously a hold-up. We don't know what it is, and we don't know how long it will take to get resolved. But if Samuelson's on the scene, you get the feeling that something, that they are at least either exploring other options or they're exploring something to do with modifying this deal.
It gives a sense that something is moving, at least.
Well, it was, because he hasn't been linked at any point with this takeover until now. Now, either he's helping this takeover, or maybe the club are already having to start exploring other options. Absolute complete speculation. Nothing to back that up, so don't go out there and say, Wim said that we're getting a new takeover. I don't know. But he's he's a money man. He's a deal maker. I feel uneasy with him being around. However, knowing the vast sums of money that are needed to complete a takeover of a club, knowing the contacts he's got and the deals he's made, we might just have to suck this one up. And if he brings Reading a good takeover deal, and that is a very big if, you just might just have to sit that back there and accept it.
Well, yeah, I think that's quite likely to happen, in a sense, obviously, if he's around. And for what happened with Zingarevich, there's no saying, like, I'm not a fan of it, obviously, because of what happened with Zingarevich, but he could very easily come out with his side of the story and say that he had no idea that Zingarevich had no money as well. He probably would have preferred Zingarevich to have money, obviously.
Well, I think he was earning a decent wage as a director, so...
Yeah, he obviously would have liked that to have continued and Reading to have been well-backed, I would imagine. As for what it means for this takeover and everything, it is just very hard to get a grip. It's hard to get a grip on the Chinese takeover in itself, let alone a takeover that might or might not be happening from some other investors. because these people who come in, especially from abroad, it's almost impossible to find out anything just by Googling their name.
Yeah, there's you can be led down some real rabbit holes, and I'm sure lots of you out there have Googled Dai Yong and Dai Zhu Li. And Mr. Chris Samuelson, I'll allow you to do that rather than say anything that can get us in trouble here on the Tilehurst End. Our crowdfunding campaign hasn't gone so well that we can afford high-powered lawyers. Although if you are a high-powered lawyer and would like to get involved. We'll just have to wait and see. As I said, it leaves me with a slightly uneasy feeling, but what can you do, unfortunately? Let's move on to more positive things, Mark. Four new Academy contracts this week. People handed pro deals. Tyler Frost, Romani Medford-Smith, Teddy Howe, and Jordan Holsgrove, the latter name you might well be familiar with, because he's the son of Paul Holsgrove. He played for Reading during the mid-90s, part of that 95 playoff finalist team. Nice to see more good names coming through the academies. I've certainly heard good things about Frost and Holsgrove in particular.
They're quite young, aren't they? I think they're only about 17 or 18, these lads. And it does give me quite an interesting sense, because Ollie went to the under-23s Chelsea at Aldershot a few weeks ago, and he said that a lot of their... our under 23 team was made up of like 18 and 17 year olds.
Well, I had the pleasure of speaking to Reading Academy manager Lee Heron last week in an interview that you'll be able to hear in the next few weeks on the Tilehurst End. I'm waiting for a quiet week, as well as the DJ Mega Party interview. Those two keeping up my sleeve for weeks we can't make this. But I was speaking to him, and as a bit of a spoiler alert, he was saying one of the things he loves is the fact that the team is so young, because it means they're blooding through that next generation, they're getting them out there. And getting them experience. So great to see more people penning deals. Just always important just to remember you can't expect too much too soon.
The contrast to the fact that it's so young means that it kind of gives me the sense that we may have cut loose the sort of 20, 21-year-old sort of generation, the kind of Cools, Fosu, which we thought was going to be the real generation.
Well, I think a lot of them are out on loan. I think you look at a lot of the sort of older guys, they are out now.
But typically the ones who have done well... have gone out on loan and done well. Like Karachan, Robson, Carney, Sigurdsson all went out and did quite well, quite high up on loan. And Cooper's out at the moment. So he is...
scored another goal last night.
Exactly. He is an example, but I do get the sense that they're hedging their bets on this new, younger generation for the first team.
It's very important to remember that for all of the players, and you talk about a team, you're talking about 18, or a squad, 18 to 25 players. How many of any crop of academy players come through? Two, three at your particular club, and a lot of them go and make careers elsewhere. But, we talked about the pomp of the, and the great work the late Eamon Dolan done. It's still averaged out over his entire sort of time in the academy as what, maybe sort of three max sort of a year?
Yeah, and it's human nature. You give these four lads have all been put on, let's say £1,000 a week, and that's just an insubordinate amount of money.
They're not insubordinate. I'm sure they're very well behaved.
Yeah, but it's with that amount of money for an 18-year-old, it can rock the boat in ways that they probably might not have thought about. That might be why the one who's the son of an ex-footballer might just take it in his stride and think it's perfectly normal.
Yeah, his dad's got a couple of good goals. He was a very good, hard-working midfielder, was Paul. The academy, keeping you up to date with their results, they lost 3-1 in the Premier League Cup. Notable for the fact that Dennis Rackles managed to get an hour, so he's nearing his return. You'd like to think he's slowly been working his way back to fitness. The team still need a point to qualify for the next round of that competition. You might remember we won it a few years ago by beating Manchester City, so we'll keep an eye on the under-23s, a takeover, and all of the key news stories right here on the Tilehurst End podcast, and of course at thetilehurstend.com. Right, that's enough of our questions and our thoughts. It's time to turn it over to you. Let's get into that mailbag.
The Tilehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetilehurstend.com.
Right. Big, big thank you, as always, to everyone who chips into the mailbag. This show is by fans for the fans. And if you weren't contributing, then we'd know that we weren't doing our jobs right. So thank you very much for taking the time to mail into the show to @thetilehurstend on Twitter. We are thetilehurstend@gmail.com for your emails. And also check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/thetilehurstend. Right, let's start with Scott in the States, who says, I love your podcast. Thanks, Scott. Very much appreciated. Reading's final 14 matches split nicely into two groups. The next seven include the other five members of the top six and only one side lower than 10th, while the final seven matches include only one team higher than 16th. How many points do the Royals need in these next seven matches to be in a good position to finish in the top six at the end of the season? What is the best case realistic scenario for these next 7 weeks? Well, Mark, we kind of touched on that. You know, looking at that block and with what we talked about earlier, from those games, how many points minimum do you think we should need?
Five draws plus a win and probably eight. One as well. So, yeah, about 8 out of 7. It sounds low, but in drawing with 5 teams around you, you prevent them from getting 3 points.
Yeah, I think if you go into the final 7 games of the season on, what would that be, you know, sort of 68, 69 points. Again,
I think that'd be a very favourable position.
Yeah, you're only talking about winning sort of 3 games. I suppose the downside, though, is if you have so little momentum going into those last 7 games. We saw very well in the 2008-09 season how Reading just couldn't get themselves out of that tailspin and sort of stuttered over the line into the playoffs. And as you mentioned, coming fourth in a 3-horse race for automatic promotion. If we're just avoiding defeat, I think you're right. Just nicking those little points here and there. Or even if they sort of win the, even if they were to lose 3 or 4 in a row, as long as they finish that stint strongly to get that momentum.
Yeah, and you can, of those 5 teams we're playing, you can win 3 and lose 2 all the other way around, and that's still 6 points to 9 points, and that's not bad.
Yeah, and the most important thing is they go into the playoffs on the hopeful presumption they make that in form and without injuries and really knowing what they're doing. So we'll see. As far as the best case realistic scenario, look, I don't think there is any team for Reading to be scared of in this division, and I include Newcastle and Brighton in that. Reading could well have got a result at St James's Park. They did get a result against Brighton, and they won there in the EFL Cup as well, beaten Huddersfield, beaten Norwich, you know, got positive results against every team this season. No team has done the double over us. A few teams could still do it, but I don't think there's anyone to fear.
No, I don't think we need to be scared of anyone. At the end of the day, we play a style of football that works both at home and away from home. We're not one of those. We are obviously unbeaten and only lost 2 at home this season, yeah. I think. So we do well at home, but we have a style of football that gets us wins and points away from home as well. So I'm happy to go to these places. I'm not, like, crying.
Yeah, you do have that slight fear because, you know, they have gotten a good beating at Brentford, pounded at Fulham, and even at places like Wolves, they've come unstuck. So away from home, you still do have that lingering fear of getting overwhelmed. But on their day, they can do anything. So thanks very much for the compliment and the email, Scott. We move on to Keith Nuoffa. I've probably butchered your surname, so I apologise right now. He said, excellent podcast as usual. Keep up the great work. Thank you very much. He said, really enjoyed William Owens, as he posts on the Tarlest End. I just call him Will. We always call him Will. Really enjoyed Will's article posted yesterday on the Tarlest End and thought that all 3 of his topics raised would make excellent discussion points for the podcast and to hear your views. I thought all 3 were really well-made points. The only thing I would question is where are all these empty seats on the halfway line that Will was talking about? I sit there and can only ever see a few. No reflection on the normally very high standard of the other blogs on the Tarlest End. Well, thank you. We are more than happy to take on constructive criticism. So thank you very much for the thoughts there. Mark, Will made 3 big points. We'll talk about the first one that Keith directly referred to. That was talking about the amount of empty seats on the halfway line. Will making the point that he thinks that a lot of fans now are really starting to pick and choose their games. Anecdotally, from conversations you've had with friends, do you sense that now that people will still get a season ticket, but they're deciding it's not a must attend?
I think that is happening purely from when I was at, like, on Tuesday as well. And the QPR game is another great example of when it's a little bit cold, when it's a Tuesday night, when the entertainment of the football still isn't at a particularly high level, people are picking and choosing. And it might be a consequence of the fact that we have relatively cheap season tickets as well. Mm. Because if you're not forking over effectively £25 per game already, you are thinking, well, you know, I can afford to miss 4 or 5 games and I'm still only paying £10-11 per game max.
Yeah, it's fantastic for the club keeping the prices low. I mean, the actual bottom line attendances haven't been too bad. I mean, the opening day we had 15,764. Last night it was 15,710. Now it was boosted by a good few men.
Yeah, I'd say definitely because I was in the East Stand looking across the Upper West. It sensed that it was probably only about a third full.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of empty seats that were counted in that attendance figure. Barnsley, the official attendance was 16,222 as well. We're 15th in the attendance table in the Championship. I know it's a... I've seen a lot of sniping on social media from opposition fans towards Reading's gate. 15th in the attendance table, despite being in the top six all season. It's not brilliant.
No, it's not. It is rare because often when we've got into these playoff positions, we do kind of bump up to 18, 19,000 per week at this time of year. That still can happen, but it doesn't look like it is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, last season we finished 11th in the attendance table. The season before that was 12th. The last time we won the league... Yeah. Despite that bounce we had, it was still only 9th highest, although the average attendance was around 19,200. So, you know, still talking a good 2-3k extra, albeit that was boosted by a lot of late season sellouts. You know, I very much encourage you to go over to the Talisman and check it out yourself and the article, you know, and Will's reasons for it. He's talking about how he feels that football fans... have been treated as, you know, consumers of entertainment for so long that they're now treating football in the same way they would, you know, even if you have like a cinema pass, you don't go and see every film now. You know, you've got one of these attraction passes that gets you into loads of theme parks. You're not going every single week. And I think it's possibly the same is starting to happen for football. As I said, if you are walking away from a ground and you're not actually entertained and you think, do you know what, this weekend I'm not going to go to the football, I'm going to go to the cinema or go shopping or go away. You know, I think the way football is going, I can understand that argument.
Well, Reading aren't really on TV and you can't really stream the matches online, which could have an even greater effect if it does happen. Luckily, that pretty much only affects Premier League teams. So even if it does, even if we do get there, we should have the attendances up anyway. But as I was just thinking, the last time we were in the Premier League, the attendances weren't full every weekend, whereas obviously... 06, 07, 08, they were. I just think that the amount of Reading fans there are in the world and in around the town are higher than they've probably ever been. But the dedication of those fans is kind of more inconsistent in a sense because of the last few seasons and because of the style of football and all the those other mitigating factors.
And we touched on this a lot in last week's show, myself and Dave, in that... As good as, I mean, last night's game will hopefully get a few more bums on seats because it was really exciting. But games, you know, if you'd come along to Saturday's game against Barnsley, I would not, as a first time viewer, be in any hurry to buy my ticket to come back. Despite where Reading are in the league, they're not playing often like a team that are in a top six spot. It can be quite turgid to watch. I mean, it's fascinating from a tactical point of view, but it's not edge of my seat. Can't wait. And the atmosphere in the stadium's not fantastic. And the holes have a lot to do with that. The fact that, you know, I sit in Y25, a hotbed of fans in the past that like to sing and make noise. And I sat there on Tuesday night and had half an empty row next to me.
Yeah.
That's not something you've seen in other years. And that really does have a knock-on effect to the whole experience. But, I mean, it's nothing against the club. The club are doing what they can to try and, you know, they're keeping ticket prices low. They're trying different initiatives. But at the end of the day, for whatever reason, fans just are picking and choosing a bit more.
Yeah, it's hard for the club because you can think of a way to maybe densify the amount of fans in certain parts of the ground and to really pack them into more around each other and have gaps like at the back, big gaps as opposed to sort of inconsistent gaps. But as we say, if season ticket holders don't turn up, then you can't guarantee that there's going to be people
exactly.
there.
Exactly that. And a couple of other, you know, Will's points as well, he made one about George Evans and how defensive midfielders can often look better than they are. And he made some great comparisons looking at people like Oliver Norwood and Danny Guthrie of how suddenly Reading fans go, oh, these guys are really good because they have so much more time in the ball for the position that they're in that, you know, they just have that ability to stand out, even if they're not actually doing a lot. I think he pointed out the fact that Evans, I think, made 6 forward passes in the opposition half, despite having a really high overall passing percentage, and from the naked eye, you think he was having a good game. Do you think it's a position where you can flatter to deceive?
Yeah, and I think centre-back is becoming that sort of position as well, because the way of passing it around the back line involves the midfielder and there's always one ball playing centre-back, it's like usually McShane for us, it thinks, oh, they're on the ball, oh, that's a good pass, they've not failed in any way. And unlike stat sites and everything, that makes them seem a lot better as well. Evans is one of those players who doesn't quite get in amongst it yet. I think he will grow to that, and he did on Tuesday night when he came on, but Norwood certainly looked a bit better than he actually was, I think, when you look at the results and the fact that he's gone to Brighton and not quite been in the team all the time. McDermott tried really hard to play Guthrie kind of off the back of a striker, which he really didn't want to do. So it's an interesting one to watch, because if those players get moved around the pitch, then they often don't do so well.
Yeah, and if they have the space closed down, I mean, Liam Kelly's suffered from it. I think he's suffered a little bit in the past couple of games from teams having more chance to scout him. I think they figured out that if you really put him under that tight pressure and high up the pitch, that he has been left wanting a little bit. I think his passing percentage has been down quite a lot.
Yeah, I'd say Kelly should be able to get away with it in the future going forward, because he has got that sort of physical attributes that I wouldn't say other players, certainly like Guthrie Norwood, have. He does get around the park quite quickly and he does have a good set of lungs on him.
Absolutely. And Will's final point was whether it was a boring 0-0 or not. We won't talk about that here, but you can go check that out on the website. So thank you again for the email, Keith. Darren Collings, well, one for the match officials, really. Where do they find 5 minutes of stoppage time from? Really didn't need that. I suppose, you know, teams, that are, well, what, six substitutes? So I suppose that's where you get 30 seconds each.
Three of them came in one big go, though.
Very true.
I think the only stoppage I could remember was when McCleary was essentially through on goal and someone absolutely hacked him down and got booked.
We didn't talk about that. Is that a red card for you?
Yeah, every day of the week, because he's absolutely hacked him from behind. Handbags, I don't care if he's in his own area.
Handbags, who was in the Eamon Dolan stand, was saying to him it wasn't, because there was the covering defender, but it was such a cynical tackle.
It was just such a bad tackle. Like, if you did that on a computer game, you would get sent off automatically, because every tackle from behind is a sort of red card. And there was a time when those were the really dangerous tackles. So I thought it was, but that made a bit of a stoppage as well, because McCleary had to get a bit of treatment.
Yeah, Keith Stroud always seems to create controversy when he referees Reading games. I noticed Dean Smith wasn't particularly happy with his performance either, thinking they should have had a penalty. But yeah, I mean, it's always a minimum of three at the end of the game, isn't it? So I'm never really sure where they get these
four goals in the second half, I guess.
Yeah, I can sort of see it wasn't outrageous, but still, yeah, very heart-stopping. Harry Smith, what a win. Love the passion and spirit. Anyone remember Danzel Gravenberch, by the way? I remember him.
He's gone the way of the Sandro Weiss, the sort of summer signing that we made when we're like, oh, we need some squad players, and you make them, and then
Fernandez.
Yeah, and you get to the later in the window and you think, oh, these guys are a bit second rate compared to those who we're now signing.
Yeah, you can't...
You do it on Football Manager, don't you, when you think, oh, he's a free agent, I'll have him. He can...
Yeah, get him into the squad if you think he's got potential. You know, sometimes you'll only see that, even if you take players on trial, sometimes you need months of training to really figure out. It was a low-cost punt by the sounds of it, and it doesn't look like he's got much of a future, but, I mean, people would have been saying the same about Liam Kelly this time last year, so
do we
know
what contract Gravenberch is on?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
So it's two or three, but I have a feeling that he's probably on three, which is a bit...
I don't think it'll be too hard, though, to shift him on if they have decided that it's not for him. So watch this space. Tony Dempster, what a difference putting McCleary back on the wing, Williams in the middle, back to round pegs, in round holes, simples. Can't very much disagree.
Yeah, no, I said earlier about Danny Williams, and McCleary again was much better on the right wing. It's a little bit frustrating when Sam comes up with these things. I don't mind him trying it, but I thought Williams played at right back against QPR some weeks ago and I didn't think he did well at all.
I'm still not sure he knows. But is there an obvious strongest running 11, or is he right to be just matching this up on a game-by-game basis?
I think he's pretty much matching it up, because he's got to find room for three good midfielders in the centre midfield and Williams if he wants to play him as well.
Yeah, Sam Richards says, show the importance of January signings. Yep, Stan was able to use the bench to make an impact because of the options he had. Can't really disagree with that either.
Yeah.
Squad are looking much, much beefier now. When you get those players back from injury, you get the Vandenbergs back, you get Paul McShane, you get Dennis Rackles back. He's really going to be spoilt for choice.
Still haven't seen Reece Fox either.
No.
Still hasn't made his debut, so...
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what Reece can do. I can't imagine he's come here just to sit on the bench.
Yeah, well, I'm quite surprised that even like against Brentford, I thought at 1-0 he'd have been a really good player to bring on.
Yeah, interesting to see if he does get an opportunity. And Matt says, good win, but why do you think we keep getting dominated in terms of shots conceded? It happens every game. On the bright side, John Swift keeps finding a way. Another below par performance, but that's now 4 goals in his last 6 games. And finally, who's been your player of the season thus far? There are 5 or 6 worthy contenders, but I can't decide. In terms of the first point in getting dominated in games, it's difficult. I mean, Reading, we say they haven't got the quality. Maybe I don't think they've got the presence in the final third to keep teams pegged back. I think teams this season have always been able to have a go at Reading and not have to worry too much about getting pegged, because we've never blown teams away. So teams have always been in the game.
Yeah, they have always been in the game. I also think style mainly is the fact that teams can run at us and get shots away relatively easily, whereas our style is to get the ball in the final third and then knock it round. If it can't have a shot, go back to the defenders or what have you, and that means that it just looks like we have less shots.
Yeah, and John Swift, yeah, great to see him scoring goals. But what do you think about player of the season? Is Swift in that conversation?
Yeah, Swift, I think, has to be in there. I think Al Habsi should probably just about be in that conversation. McCleary might be the one I go for at the moment.
Yeah.
Purely for his assists. Liam Moore. And goal tally. Liam Moore, around about, maybe not in the top three, though. Same for Liam Kelly. I think he's around about, but he's not quite there yet.
Yeah, I think for the overall impact he's had on the season, I think I'd go McCleary. I think Jan Kermgren deserves a mention as well. I think he's been excellent. But lots. It's good to have a race. I mean, in the past couple of seasons, it's been obvious.
Just goalkeepers, hasn't it? And that's a bad sign when it's goalkeepers.
It is. So even though we've just said our Habs is a contender. Anyway, that does wrap up the mailbag. Thank you very much to everyone who has got in touch. Best way to get yourself on the show is use that hashtag TTEPodcast. That way I can very easily find the tweets you make. Otherwise, sometimes they get lost, especially on a day like today when I asked for the nominations for Reading's worst ever player, Mark. And needless to say, we were inundated with suggestions.
Immerse Fay.
Well, I think he's...
That is all.
He's a very strong contender. Anyway, you'll be able to check out why we've asked for that on the Tyler Stem website in the next couple of days. Right. Only one place to go for us now. It's any other business time as we look ahead to next Tuesday's game at Huddersfield.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business.
Mark, I know lots of Reading fans out there have been putting their hand in their wallet and putting a little cheeky bet on Reading to crash the top two party with some very generous odds. But if there's anyone that's going to crash it for me, it's this Huddersfield side that we face next Tuesday. The reason we're playing them Tuesday, not Saturday, is because they're still involved in the FA Cup. They will take on the mighty Manchester City. Oh, I dread to think what their momentum's going to be like if they manage to knock City out of the FA Cup as well.
Yeah.
Could do with them getting a good old-fashioned kicking from Pep Guardiola.
In many senses of the word, really, as well.
Yeah, not that you ever wish injury on anyone. But suspensions.
This would be the time to do
that. No, Mark. Never wish injuries. I wish suspensions on everyone, though. They can all get suspended. David Wagner really doing a fantastic job there. Again, they looked like they were going to have a wobble in sort of October time. They were starting to drift away. But they fought back and they are just on a ridiculous run. They've won 10 of the last 12. They're unbeaten at home since November. They've won the last 5 games. Hardest game of the season so far?
As hard as Newcastle. I wouldn't say it's any more or less hard than Newcastle.
Even when we played Newcastle, they weren't in form.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of fear factor going to Newcastle, and there probably will be a bit of fear factor going to Huddersfield. I remember at the start of the season that Football League did a kind of optimism survey as to who are the most optimistic fans of the season ahead. I was very surprised to see Huddersfield fans were right at the top of the optimism sort of scale they produced. And now you can see why. The team I look at, and I'm not sure I really know many of the players. I know Moy is a very promising young Australian player, tied to Man City. Izzy Brown on loan for Chelsea. But I wouldn't look at them and say they're going to overrun pretty much every team they play.
Yeah, our old chum Naki Wells in there, of course. He certainly knows how to score against Reading. And Van La Parra, who did us a massive favour by getting himself sent off at the Medeski Stadium earlier this season. I mean, it's such a long time ago. I'm struggling to remember much of the game. I did think Huddersfield were really good even before the red card. I don't think... Yeah, you look at that man-to-man, and again, what we said earlier, I don't think there's much for Reading to fear. And especially if they do have a bit of a blip and get beat by City in the Cup, Reading can really... You know, they've got that 7 days rest, which will really help them. And I'm sure, you know, Stan will be glad to hopefully get the likes of McShane back. We'll have to see team news updates later in the week. But they can certainly get a result up here. And if they do, it's a like you say, it's such a momentum boost.
Yeah, it's a good time to play them, definitely. And the fact that they're on a good run, you know that these runs have to end at some point. And it's not always the worst thing to go to a team who have won their last five. And obviously the City game will probably turn that. Their little wobble in about October, November is the good time to have a wobble. I think that's a useful time for a team that wants to get promoted because they have realigned quite well since then. But there's no reason to say that we have to be expecting a defeat here.
No, and as I said, it's not quite a free game, but if you did have to look at that, you know, roadmap to the playoffs, you would probably be chalking this one off and saying, you know what, probably expect to get beat here. And you'd probably expect Huddersfield to make the playoffs regardless of how well Reading do. So it's almost a bonus game for Reading. I think they can go into this one and really give it a go. Because if they win, it's fantastic. And if they lose, it's not the end of the world, is it?
Yeah, you don't want to be losing 5-0 like we have done a couple of times on the road. But the fact of the matter is that they've just beaten Leeds. They've just beaten Brighton at home.
Yeah.
If we go and get a scrubby 0-0, or if we get a lucky penalty in the last minute and get a 1-1, then that's a point that pretty much every other team hasn't taken.
Yeah, but they're like Reading. Their goal difference isn't very dominant. We saw on Tuesday night, they scraped past Rotherham.
Yeah.
Aside, you know, of course, for a historic low points total. So certainly there to be beat. The bookmakers don't make us massive outsiders. The Huddersfield are evens. The draw is 5-2. And Reading are 13-5 as well. So somewhere between 2 and 3 to 1. So some good value there. In terms of the prediction league heading into this one, it's much as you were. Johnny Williams tops the table on 28 points. Charles and Handbags Harris are on 26. I'm on 25. Westy is on 19. I'm going to wait to give my prediction until the cups are on Saturday. That's so no joy there. But Mark, do you want to give a prediction?
I'd say 1-1 is my immediate reaction. Two teams on decent enough form should cancel each other out. And Huddersfield, I say they beat those two teams. They did concede in both those games, and it was quite a lucky win against Leeds.
Absolutely. Well, it remains to be seen how that one goes. We'll, of course, be back to cover it after Tuesday's game. There'll be a podcast probably on Tuesday or Wednesday, not just looking back at that game, but ahead to Brighton as well on the telly. Great to see that Reading have sold out their away allocation as well. So more than 2,000 Reading fans packing into the Amex. Just giving that a little extra boost.
Yeah, I'm sure Leeds would have taken more, though.
Of course.
As the saying goes.
Absolutely, of course. And just before we go as well, you might notice we do some videos here from the studio before, and lots of people have pointed out, why have you got that massive, great, big, empty white wall behind you? Get some merchandise up, Wimp. And I've listened to you. I have got some memorabilia on the way. It is a couple of signed Reading shirts. And I've just got to give a big shout out and a thank you to Keeley's Framing. They're based on the King's Road in Reading. You can check them out at keeleysframing.co.uk. They've done a fantastic job framing a couple of shirts. I can't wait to pick them up. So if you have got, you know, like me, I had these signed shirts sat in my drawer for ages and you thought, oh God, it's going to be ridiculously expensive. I'll never get it done. Very much encourage you to go down and have a chat with them. And I've said they've sent me a picture of the end products and I can't wait. So yeah, thank you very much to those guys. And again, thank you very much to all of you for listening and supporting the show. As mentioned, we'll be back soon. And in the meantime, you can head over to thetiresend.com for lots more opinion analysis, player ratings and a report up from both of this week's games. And we've got lots of other nice bits and pieces, including that poll to crown our worst ever player. So head over there. Mark, thanks very much for joining me. Have a good week.
Thank you. It sounds like we've got a sponsor, so I'm going to go and get everything framed.
Please do.
I'm presuming it's free.
No.
If I quote code TTE118 or something like that.
Unfortunately not. But I'm sure if you speak to them very nicely, you know, who knows?
And hand over some capital.
Yeah, I'm sure maybe. If you give them money in exchange for a service, they will do you a solid.
Yeah, that might work.
But yes, anyway, thank you very much, Mark. And we'll be back next week. I don't know who will be on the show. It's a rotating cast of characters here. But I'll keep you updated on Twitter. Get that feedback in, as always. And a better place to win. Come on, you are.
get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.